WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Linda Kenyon. A federal judge in Oregon has temporarily blocked President Trump from deploying the National Guard in Portland, Oregon. Attorney General there, Dan Rayfield, applauds the move.
Mobilizing the United States military in our cities is not normal. It should not be normal, and we will fight to make sure that it is never normal.
The Defense Department had said it was placing 200 members of Oregon's National Guard under federal control for 60 days to protect federal property after the president called the city war-ravaged. Oregon officials and Portland residents alike called that description ludicrous. President Trump has authorized the deployment of 300 National Guard members to Chicago after Border Patrol agents shot and injured a woman they said tried to run them over. At a Democratic fundraiser in Atlanta the night before the announcement, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker denounced ICE actions in his state.
They raided an apartment complex in the middle of the night and perp walked a group of young children out of the building with their hands zip-tied behind them, separating them from their parents.
Governor Pritzker later pushed back against the president's decision to send in the National Guard, calling it performative and not about actual safety. Israel and Hamas are preparing for indirect talks in Egypt on a new U.S. plan to end the war in Gaza. CBS's Barbara Plett-Usher reports.
Mr. Trump is very keen to be able to declare a peace deal as soon as possible, and he's also very engaged, personally engaged, and willing to put, so far anyway, pressure on both sides, which we haven't really seen before, public pressure, I mean. So that has given this process some momentum, but there is still far to go.
Israel's prime minister says he hopes to announce the release of all hostages from Gaza in the coming days. Hamas has accepted some elements of the U.S. plan, but wants assurances that Israel will not restart the war once Hamas releases all of the hostages. Another member of the Bush family is getting into politics. CBS's Christopher Cruz says Republican Jonathan Bush plans to enter the race to become the next governor of Maine.
Jonathan Bush is the cousin of former President George W. Bush and the nephew of former President George H.W. Bush, who had a coastal summer home in southern Maine for many years. In a statement, the 56-year-old healthcare entrepreneur says he'll be joined at his announcement this week by, quote, several hundred supporters, friends, and colleagues. Six Republicans are running for the nomination, but none have the name recognition of Jonathan Bush.
Tropical storm Priscilla has formed in the Pacific off the coast of Mexico. The National Hurricane Center says Priscilla is a large tropical storm with maximum sustained winds of 45 miles per hour. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For Civic Media News, I'm Shali Pittman. The contested case hearing over Enbridge's Line 5 pipeline has concluded in Madison, where environmental advocates and the Bad River Band are challenging state permits for the project. Farmers' advocates warn that denying the permits could cut off a vital propane supply for rural communities. Opponents say the pipeline threatens waterways, wetlands, and tribal lands. Judith Ruiz Branch of the Public News Service has more.
Environmental groups and the Bad River Tribe are challenging permits the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources issued to Enbridge in November for rerouting the pipeline. Nate Zimdars with Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation emphasizes what's at stake for farmers who depend on propane, a byproduct from Line 5.
Oftentimes, our farmers are forgotten about in conversations like this. Just think about the food that's getting put on your table. It's got to come from somewhere. It comes from our farmers who are working really hard during this time of year and are dependent on that energy.
He emphasizes farmers are already experiencing the strains of the federal government shutdown and difficult economic conditions. Opponents of the pipeline are just as determined, saying rerouting Line 5 would be detrimental to the environment, increasing water contamination and threatening cultural resources. Without permit approval, the line would have to shut down, and Zimdars says there are currently no viable alternatives. While much of the opposition has focused on the environment, environmental impacts, Zimdars believes the DNR has conducted thorough studies to mitigate these concerns. The project would affect about 200 waterways and more than 100 acres of wetlands. An administrative law judge is expected to issue a final decision in the case. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Sunny, breezy, and warm again with high temperatures in the lower 80s. For tonight, mostly clear and quite mild with lows in the mid-60s. On Monday, increasing clouds, showers, and a few thunderstorms likely, especially later in the day, highs in the mid-70s. Currently, it's 62.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'll be joined by the incomparable, the indefatigable Congresswoman Gwen Moore, talking all things shutdown and who really bears the responsibility. Hint, it's Trump.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
I wish people could see the theatrics we put on there, Jacob.
We worked so hard for the non-visual audience.
Man, love that. Well, it's Saturday. You know, it is 1 hour of busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educators talking education. Man, gotta love this. Producer Jacob is in the house. Me, Dr. Tim Slecker, I'm here. And Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, he's at a faculty senate meeting right now, Jacob. So he is fully doing the educated educator thing.
He must be filibustering there in that senate because it's taking forever.
He's like, hey guys, let's keep the debate going because that way maybe I can, maybe miss the first segment of Busted Pencils, you know.
He said, I will now read all of Game of Thrones.
Oh.
To stop this motion.
Either that or potentially, I just hope that he didn't bring his taxi driver outfit with the loaded calculator.
You got to be careful with the calculators. I preach this on this show all the time. First, I think we should ban calculators in general. But if you're going to have them, you need to be careful with your calculators. Make sure there's no numbers punched in. They're absolutely at zero. But, you know, you can never be too careful, Tim. That's a throwback to the Producer's Choice show in case people.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if you're going, what are these guys talking about?
Have they lost it?
Last Producer's Choice, Johnny Lupinacci, and the taxi driver calculator demonstration that, it was one of the things that he loved about teaching. So that's all we need to say about that, right, Jacob?
Yeah. If people really want to know, they have to go back and listen to the last podcast.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen Taxi Driver, we've just given you something to do later on this Saturday after you're done listening to the show. You know, go out and take that and, yeah, that's Robert De Niro. What was he, like 13 when he did that movie, Jacob?
I think Jodie Foster was like 13 when she did that movie. I think Robert De Niro is just a very, very old man at this point. Unless you see him in The Irishman, where they really de-aged him to look about 70. So he looked a lot younger in that movie.
Nice. Well, and that mole, though, that characteristic mole, you know, right there, kind of below the cheek, a little bit above the lip. He's got it there, though, man.
I'm thinking about having cosmetic surgery to add a mole to my face because I just lack that distinguishing feature. You know, that's my big problem in life.
What happens when you grow a new mole in your 50s?
Tim, what is this show about? What do we do here? Is this what we're going to talk about, growing moles?
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's a lovely Saturday show.
It's a beautiful Saturday.
Over the past few weeks, we have had some great guests, some great interviews. And, you know, listener feedback was like, you guys are great. You're bringing us some great guests. But where is just, you know, Tim, Jacob, Johnny, just, you know, telling us about everything that's going on in education, letting us know the way of the world, where everything's happening. And well, we said, you know what? Let's get back to the roots of just, you know, education talk radio. What's happening out there? Jacob, I remember pitching Busted Pencils, the concept, and people going, you're going to have like a radio talk show about education? Why? Who would want to listen to that? Who would want to know what bulletin boards look like and things like that? I was just like, that gave me a totally invigorated sense of going, that's exactly why there needs to be a Busted Pencils education talk show.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about bulletin boards and pencil sharpening and bathroom breaks and stuff like that. Although occasionally during the show, we need to sharpen a pencil and need to take a bathroom
break. You're giving me ideas for producer's choice next week. I'm thinking bulletin boards, bathroom breaks. Yeah, okay. These are good. Keep pre-associated.
Find another B in there and you've got a trifecta there. But no, Jacob, what's going on in the education world? So much is going on. And man, we've got a list of news stories here. If we get to them all, it's going to be great. If we don't, we'll make sure that we mentioned towards the end of the show to go and check these out. But Jacob, you know, first and foremost here, and if you're listening on Saturday, my guess is that the reality is that yes, the government will still be shut down. We are recording this on Thursday, the day two, right, of the government shutdown, yeah.
I believe we're in day two.
Nothing in the news shows me that Friday, tomorrow, you know, the day before you hear this show, they're going to figure something out, because I'm pretty sure that both sides delusionally believe this is helping them.
Well, yeah, I guess they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't at least think there's a good chance that it'll work out for them and make them look good. The thing that gives me hope, Tim, about this situation, you know, is that whatever you want to say about politics in America right now, we've got a very reasonable president who's willing to compromise and bring people together. He's a uniter, not a divider. So
uniter,
we'll be good.
In fact, I think news story one coming out from NBC, so what happens during a government shutdown? Well, yes, all of those federal offices, the people that work there don't have to go to work. They get snow days, I guess, or something like that.
Sort of, yeah.
They're you know, so federal employees are furloughed. People say fired. They don't show up to work. And understanding that you know, most federal employees are civilian people who have 9-to-5 jobs doing things to keep, you know, the lights on that we call America. And after DOGE, there's a lot less of those federal employees.
True.
But in the Department of Education, there's a whole group of people who still work there, take care of things, except now they don't work there. And like really good, responsible people, the email, if you would happen to be emailing, say, somebody in the Department of Education right now, asking them a question about, you know, will student loan forgiveness ever start back up again or something like that, you would typically get an email saying, sorry, due to the government shutdown right now, I am not able to respond to emails. However, once the government is back up and running, I will gladly get back to you. Things like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, just a cordial, friendly.
A standard out of office message.
Yes, out of office message. And according to the news, the Department of Ed people put a very simple, I'm not here, I'll get back to you as soon as I get back to work. And lo and behold, some of them found out that the message that they put in to be, you know, automatically generated when somebody sends them an email, the automatically generated email, somebody changed it.
No. Well, wait a minute. Yes. Who could it have? Well, I guess we'll see when you say what it says, right?
I don't know. And now the emails that are coming out of the Department of Ed are saying the Democrats, those lefty, you know, crazy people, shut down the government, and I can't answer the email now. Things like that, Jacob. So, in other words, incredibly partisan emails that blame the Democrats for the shutdown. And I know somebody's out there going, well, it was their fault, and that's just the way that okay, there's a problem. There's a law that forbids
laws.
There used to be, there still is the law. Now, whether we, you know, in fact, there's some good comments in this story, but you're not allowed to do that. Well, yeah, hack into somebody's email and change their message, that's a whole problem. But the reality of putting out a partisan statement as a federal employee using federally, that would mean taxpayer-funded technology, the wires, all those things, there's a law that says they're not allowed to do things like that. And right now you've got a bunch, or you know, a group of federal employees right now whose doctored emails look like they sent out partisan emails. And will they now be in trouble for their emails being hacked and somebody else writing emails for them? Will this be something that they will get in trouble for?
Well, Tim, your thoughts, you might think, well, just change it back. There's this crazy thing that happened. It says, hey, sorry, I can't help you right now. The Democrats hate America. You think, oh, well, just change it back if you notice it. Here's the problem, Tim, and this is, we're getting this from NBC News. I'll just quote from the article. One person reported changing the out-of-office message back to their normal nonpartisan version, only to have it revert to the crazy anti-Democrat version. And they said this, none of us consented to this, and it's written in the first person as if I'm the one conveying this message, and I'm not. I don't agree with it. And I don't think that it's ethical or legal. It violates the Hatch Act. And that's exactly what you were talking about, Tim. The law that says you can't use government functions to support biased political purposes. Again, like we said, the law, do people still believe in things like that in 2025? But it's on the books, folks.
Okay. So Jacob, on this one, though, this is the... So the email sender, did they break the law and violate the Hatch Act, or did the hacking into the emails of people and posting messages that they didn't send, isn't that another breaking of some kind of law?
Well, I would say that the person violating the Hatch Act is the one who's manipulating the system to force these messages to come out. It's, you know, you're tricking people into being unwitting mules for carrying your weird political message across through the government. So I don't think you can blame those guys. It has to be the people who are behind this whole thing.
Well, and so that's what I'm asking the question.
And you don't need Encyclopedia Brown to find out who is behind this whole thing, by the way.
And you're going to say, you know, guess what? And geez, I wonder whose idea or what it where this came from. Well, we pointed out at the beginning of, you know, the episode here. You know, hey, if it fits what I'm doing, I'm going to do it. Those laws, they're just suggestions, Jacob. You know, hey, but, you know, more education news, lots to go on. But, hey, if you're going to hack an email, you know who to do it for. Busted Pencils. We'll be right back.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
The green and gold tailgating, the frozen tundra. Lambeau Field has a legacy all its own, including where to build it. Residents on both sides of Green Bay argued for it. Officials wanted property with room for growth. In the end, 50 acres of farmland was purchased, but the address, Ashwaubenon. More bargaining, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Now, do you know the other reason leaders considered this annexation so important? Parking, beer sales, keeping the Packers in Green Bay? The answer coming up. The Green Bay City Stadium project moved quickly from there, and in less than a year, opened with a Packers-Bears game. It became Lambeau Field in 1965, following the death of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau. So did you guess why the land annexation was so important? It's all three, keeping the team in the city, parking, and beer sales. Ashwaubenon was dry at the time. Officials believe Packers fans wanted to be able to buy beer and could in Green Bay. This history makes it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
State Senator Jeff Smith. We're talking about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. Republicans blocked funding for this.
They instead sent the governor a 16-page letter blaming him for this problem. Well, it was in his budget. Once the budget is out of his office and in their hands, it's up to them. Our job is to manage the funding. We can do it, but the governor can't. So it's avoiding our own responsibility by not addressing that.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Man, we are truly back for real. It's Busted Pencils, fully led education talk, educated educators talking education. And yes, the Joctor is back.
He this brought is the that Joctor, Johnny Lupinacci.
Oh, yeah.
There he is, man. We are so glad you are back, Johnny. We figured that you were. Jacob put forth that since it was a, you know, a faculty senate meeting, that maybe you were, you know, using the time. And Jacob, what was that political term you?
I use fancy words sometimes. I'm sorry. Filibustering. I thought you might be filibustering up there at the Senate.
No, there's a lot of, faculty governance on campuses for our higher ed listeners. You know, the routine, lots of constituency concerns these days, which is at the end of every faculty senate meeting agenda. And unlike our government shutdown, right, our faculty governance does not seem to be shut down, which I was like, hey, since the governance is shut down, does that mean no faculty senate meeting this week? No, it didn't.
Well, Johnny, that. I'm wondering then if this came up in the faculty senate here, because you know, we're covering the education news that is breaking right now. And, you know, Johnny, when it comes time for, you know, universities to, you know, get money, there typically has been a process, you know, by writing grants, you know, doing scholarship, looking deeply, putting a lot of effort into committing to that whole idea of getting knowledge transferred. And, you know, you do lots of revisions, you do, you know, you get it, you send it to a government agency, it comes back with ideas, you know, it's a process of real merit. Did you guys come up, did you get to discuss the new way to get federal money?
No.
You didn't?
No. What's the new way? What's, fill me in.
The new way is to say, yes, sir. And this is the breaking news today. Yes, sir. Trump asks 9 colleges to commit to his political agenda to get favorable access to federal money.
Huh.
Yeah. So, well, I didn't know if you were one of those 9 colleges that.
Definitely not. But let's see. I got to take a look at this.
Well, Tim, I've started a semi-legitimate correspondence program that I've been offering people, so maybe I can get in on this. You know, it's sort of a Trump stakes level operation, so you should be fine with it.
Well, it just says, yeah, in this one here I'm looking at, this is out of Virginia, but this is an AP story. It is, the White House is asking 9 major universities to commit to President Donald Trump's political priorities in exchange for more favorable access to federal money. Called the Compact for Academic Excellence in Higher Education, it asks the universities to accept the government's definition of gender and apply it to campus bathrooms, locker rooms, and women's sports teams. It asks colleges to stop using race, gender, and a wide range of student demographics in the admissions process, and require students to take their darn SATs, Johnny. And with that, you get yourself some moolah.
Tim, where did you send me this article today?
I didn't, Johnny, but let me.
Yeah, just, this is catching me off guard, and I'm curious of more. Because
if it makes you feel better, he didn't send it to me either. So I'm also just listening to Tim.
He's just, yeah.
Hey. So,
because I want to dig into what
there
this
it is right there in the chat for you.
You academics always needing to see the actual information. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Well, sometimes you got to look at,
this is not Tim throwing a sarcasm bomb at you, dude.
No, well, that's what I'm trying to sift through. But also, there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation. There's also a lot of sometimes stretching a headline on the situation. And I like to check, I like to get my information, check its sources, and really dig in to understand. So this one's catching me off guard, so I don't have any comment, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean not a lot of universities are going to be too hip to this, and it has very little to do with Trump, you know. Well, I know raging liberals want it to be all about Trump, and it's a Trump administration, but it's just governmental overreach. And if you're a researcher, you're working within, you know, commitment to what we would call scientific consensus.
Right? Johnny, you are so bound up in the old way of doing things. In fact, Texas, in Austin, University of Texas, they are honored that they get to be part of this compact. However, dissent from California Governor Newsom said that if any universities sign on to this compact, he's going to cut them out of state funding for grants, which would be up to $2.8 billion of student financial aid. Wow.
This sounds like it sucks, Tim, to be a university in this situation where you're just really right in the middle of this big culture war political thing.
Well, it's a good example, Tim, here of an historical overreach of of federal government on education. Education is a state, right? But here we go with the idea that if you want some money, it's like a Daddy Warbucks thing. If you want some money, do these things we want you to do. And And so, yeah, I'm catching up a little slow here, long day, but it's definitely governmental overreach, in my opinion, and indicative of this whole, like, federal government says, and Tim, like you said, they expect people to be like, we want the money, we'll say yes.
Oh, man. Thank God Johnny's back. And, man, we got more news stories coming up. When we get back, it's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded. See you in a sec.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
CBS News Brief. A federal judge in Oregon has temporarily blocked President Trump from deploying National Guard troops in Portland. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield applauds the move.
Mobilizing the United States military in our cities is not normal. It should not be normal, and we will fight to make sure that it is never normal.
The president called the city war-ravaged. Oregon officials called that ludicrous. Israel and Hamas are preparing for indirect talks in Egypt on a new U.S. plan to end the war in Gaza. CBS's Barbara Platt-Usher reports on the impact of President Trump's involvement.
So that has given this process some momentum, but there is still far to go.
Another member of the Bush family is getting into politics, seeking to become the next governor of Maine.
Jonathan Bush is the cousin of former President George W. Bush and the nephew of former President George H.W. Bush.
CBS's Christopher Cruz. Six Republicans are vying for the GOP nomination. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
The Brewers bury the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where the Brewers beat the Cubs 9-3. The Cubs' Michael Busch led off with a solo home run shot. Milwaukee responded with a six-run rally in the bottom of the first and never looked back. Freddie Peralta lasted until midway through the sixth with 95 pitches, giving up two solo home run shots. His nine strikeouts ties a Brewers team record for most strikeouts in a playoff game since Don Sutton and two others. Game two, Monday night, just after 8 o'clock, Quinn Priester set to get the start. College football, the Badgers made a change at quarterback, starting Hunter Simmons. They scored on the opening drive, but that was about it as Wisconsin lost at Michigan today, 24-10. Luke Fickell.
That's tough. I don't care on either side of the ball. I don't know if they had a 13-play drive, you know, and I know we did on the first series, but we have to be able to find ways. The difference in a ball game is some big plays.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There is one house that will be less full. Fraudsters Lori Laughlin and husband Massimo Giannulli have decided to take a break from their marriage. The couple was embroiled in a college admissions scandal in 2019 after bribing college officials to get their daughters of limited intelligence into a college. The couple pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit fraud. Ex-Full House actor Laughlin spent 2 months and Giannulli 5 months in minimum security correctional facilities. Yep, they even finagled their way into better prisons. The Hollywood Reporter says the two have been married for 28 years and have decided not to file divorce papers. At this point, the college admissions scandal was a nationwide conspiracy. Fellow actors Felicity Huffman and William Macy were also involved in the scandal because they cheated for their rich kids, too. Okay, I get that it might be a bummer to be privileged and not all that bright, but the parents are actors. Couldn't they have taught their kids to at least pretend to be smart? For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Is violent crime in the U.S. higher than 25 years ago? No. Violent crime is lower nationally and in major cities.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Sunny, breezy, and warm again with high temperatures in the lower 80s. For tonight, mostly clear and quite mild with lows in the mid-60s. On Monday, increasing clouds, showers, and a few thunderstorms likely, especially later in the day. Highs in the mid-70s. Currently, it's 62.
Is violent crime in the U.S. higher than 25 years ago? No. Violent crime is lower nationally and in major cities than 25 years ago, according to FBI and Justice Department data. In 2023, cities with 250,000 or more people reported 771 violent crimes per 100,000 residents, down from 1,093 in 2000. Nationally, violent crime has stayed below 400 incidents per 100,000 residents for a decade, compared to about 500 in the late 1990s. Pew Research reported a 49% drop in violent crime, which includes murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, since 1993. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, book bans have not gone away, but we tend to forget about it. We're going to talk about book bans and what that means for our children. Please join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Yeah. It's Busted Pencils Fully. Leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Oh, yeah. It's a Saturday 1 hour show. Love all the people out there right now across all the civic media stations listening to us in your car. Beautiful Saturday, I'm sure. Fall, October day. Maybe you're out, you know, walking with your headphones, taking a stroll in nature in the woods. We appreciate you being here. And yeah, if you're downloading and listening when it fits you, thank you also. It is Tim, Johnny, and Jacob. We've had great guests for the past few Saturdays, but, you know, listeners said, hey, we want to hear Tim, Johnny, and Jacob kind of just telling us what's going on, what's happening in the world, doing a little bit of that kind of free flow thinking, you know, letting Johnny have the basketball and doing all those kind of, you know, behind the back dribbles, running up to the bat, you know, free flowing, Jake, Johnny, or break dancing, maybe. I don't know. Johnny, though, big news story here. Democrats, you know, and we have been very critical of Democrats going into on their education reform. We've said that Democrats have always been on the wrong side, particularly with public education. And I saw this news story and went, oh, my God, somebody's finally got it. Rahm Emanuel has stated that Democrats have we've lost a lot of elections because of the position we've held on education. And if you look at this Fox News story, he thinks that Democrats need to go back to the fundamentals and the basics. And I'm paraphrasing a quote that he had in there, but Democrats have spent too much time pointing out that we need to correctly use the right pronouns for people when students don't even know what a pronoun is. And Johnny, what he's saying is we got to get back to education reform, holding kids and teachers accountable for the things that matter. Math and reading, and this is going to be the Democratic strategy to win back, I don't know what, Johnny. And I'm looking at this and Jacob and going, really? What got us in this mess was the reform movement that Rahm Emanuel was trying to bring back from the dead, which is really test and punish standards, teachers, you've got no say. All of the things of which parents, teachers that created the teacher exodus. It was a horrendous time. And Emanuel thinks this is the way back for the Democrats, is to get back to the stuff that everybody hated. Johnny, Jacob.
Well, Tim, wow, that's a lot of stuff, from free flowing. Passing the ball to
free form break dancing.
Yeah. I was keeping up. And then, you know, this news story, I'm just going to point out, you know, it happened outside of Fox News, but it's, you know, contextual here. Anything from Fox News, we're going to basically take in context. Tim, I'm not sure that is back from the dead. I'm not sure it ever died. The high stakes testing regimen and the idea of funding directly tied to, you know, this notion of, you know, test scores, reading math. If you go into, you know, most of our elementary schools, it's predominantly reading math, a little bit of science, maybe some social studies, reading math, reading math, reading math. And that's nothing against reading and math, but Tim, I think it's very well and alive. And this is one of those political dog whistles. I'm not surprised that it's championed here in the front of Fox News, but, you know, Rahm is just saying, like, he's attacking scientific consensus on gender identities. Yeah. Right. I'm not trying. And I don't do the whole liberal versus conservative thing. That's all irrelevant to this. This is scientific consensus, like what we know about gender identity. It's a dog whistle for the conservatives in our government or championing these ideas for political support. I'm going to attack pronouns. And then I'm going to say, in the same news interview, I'm going to attack not only the idea of people having different identities, you know, that which we know science has proven to us that this exists. So it's not like, hey, some woke liberals made this up. A whole lot of people in our communities have different genders than just male or female. And you might be driving like, what in the world?
What is Lupinacci talking about?
But, you know, I get it. I've been there where I'm like, I don't understand. You know, it's gender is socially constructed. Okay, I get all that. But you know, science is pretty cut and dry. Well, actually, you know, we had a great show with Ethan Siegel way back in the day. It was maybe a year or so ago, where he wrote about the, you know, the scientific evidence, the mounting scientific consensus. That means like the majority of different scientists around the world are saying, and I'm going to summarize, hey, there's more to gender than the doctor that looks at your parts when you're born. That this is the rather rudimentary way of assigning gender. And it's far more complex than we have reduced it to, which I'm going to come full circle around to here. When we reduce things to twos and we create this either or we have a two-party system, you leave yourself extremely vulnerable for immovable disagreement because it becomes one versus the other, right? And we have this habit of being fixed and stuck in it's this or it's that, one or the other. And when we get into that kind of mode, or, you know, I'll say it, when our government is a two-party system entrenched in its political ideas and opposed to one another, more often than interested in supporting democracy and following, like, say, scientific consensus or, you know, civic literacies, like, hey, what are the basics of democracy and how do we support that? Even when we disagree with one another, we leave ourselves extremely vulnerable, like Jacob said, for what we know and have been calling in news and in this moment, a cultural war. Right. We don't have like four or five or six or seven different competing perspectives on this. And so this is all that. It's a put down to kids, the specific article. The kids not only are spending too much time learning about different pronouns, they don't even know what a pronoun is. You're attacking identities and you're attacking the intelligence of young people.
Right.
And implicitly their teachers.
But you know, this, though, again, scientific consensus, but, and yes, I agree with you. Actually, that is still the way of the world, testing and standards and things like that, we know. However, I would point out that it's not very popular. Jennifer Berkshire, who has done incredible historical research on the education reform movement and what it has produced, and it has produced a real kind of either ambivalence or even a push for students and parents to say, we've had enough, and now this whole why is, quote, privatizing becoming popular is, well, you know, to get you out of these schools. I see Rahm Emanuel railing and saying we need more of what isn't working currently. I'll give you that. And in fact, he goes on to the next thing, of which we have had very deep discussions about, saying, you know, science of reading. We have to put this in. You're talking back to science. We've had, you know, our favorite guest, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, come on and point out that, you know, this whole, quote, science of reading thing isn't science. It in and of itself is a politically motivated way to stop multiple ways of allowing kids to learn how to read and allowing teachers to learn how to read. And so is it really a good, I'm going to put it this way, is it a good strategy to impose on the Democrats that they double down on crap?
Well, Tim, it's snake oil sales. This art, like this interview, this article, let's call it for what it is. It's an ad for political support and for purchasing. If we trace the money, I haven't done the research on this, but if you back the money up to that high stakes testing standards era that I claim we're still very heavily in it, it's, hey, science of reading one isn't science, right? It's just a marketing name. It's like if I call, you know, my telephone, it's a communication box, right? Or whatever. It's a giving a name to it's a product. Science of reading is like the name. It's a marketing brand. So he says, attack students' knowledge, like how well students are doing. He says, if you believe these things, it's a dog whistle. Call in the people. If you feel like this about you, you're tired of pronouns and you think kids should be learning a specific way, buy my product. Now, it might not be his direct product, but it's a group of people, right, who have at all times worked to maintain the use of education as one, a place to make money, mm-hmm. so marketize it, and two, to maintain social class. I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist in that, like these people want to keep poor kids poor, but the idea here being is the reason why we have the pushback against the high stakes testing, mm-hmm. Tim, right? Because within a fraction of a tenth of my math terms are all over the place. There's researchers who could predict the kid's ACT and SAT score within a tenth of a point, right?
Right.
Based on their socioeconomic status. And we still haven't addressed that fully. These attempts to say, hey, these, because of the inequality in our communities, these tests further exacerbate and don't necessarily show understanding. They just sort people. So the idea being many universities, many places have said, well, there's compelling evidence here to look at, you know, candidates, applicants differently.
Right.
To find a better measure of your success and knowledge base. Well, also, guess what? Those tests belong to a test company that gets administered and does this harmful sorting, and we pay for it. As individuals, you pay to take these tests. So again, just deciphering the code, which is what I love to do with news headlines, especially and the politically irresponsible ones like Fox News, or there's, I'm sure, liberal versions of the same thing, right? It's all guilty parties. Sometimes you just got to sift through and call out what it is. It's attacking diverse people. It's mm-hmm. attacking the science, not the science of reading brand, the actual practice of science and gender, like medical research,
right?
Attacking that, and then says, if you want to attack that with me, like that's what riles you up. Well, let's also kick a kid while they're down because they're stupid and don't know pronouns. And in fact, why are they even learning about pronouns? Oh, just ignore the fact that science has really proven to us that there are diverse gender identities. Okay. So if you're with me, buy my product.
Well, buy my product, but it's also it's and so if you like the way Republicans have made things, elect me as a Democrat because I'm now going to stand for the things that the Republicans have put in place. I see this as a political strategy of going, did he really even have any consultants that he paid to actually come up with this winning strategy for the Democrats? Democrats, if you're out there listening, tell Rahm Emanuel enough. Hey, but you haven't had enough of us. We'll be right back.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Concerned residents in the town of Stella near Rhinelander packed their town hall to demand answers from the EPA and DNR about PFAS contamination. The toxic forever chemicals have been found at high levels in drinking water and waterways across the area. The DNR says that contamination came from industrial sludge spread on farm fields by two nearby paper companies. There is currently no requirement that companies spreading sludge on crops must disclose whether it contains PFAS. Wisconsin's coastal communities are getting more money to help improve and protect shorelines. In celebration of Coastal Awareness Month, the Wisconsin Department of Administration is handing out $1.3 million in Wisconsin Coastal Management Program grants to 35 communities across our state. Right now on the Defender podcast, the amazing story of one Wisconsin food that was banned, burned, and disappeared from our plates. Listen at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner talking about this new piece of legislation in regards to housing. And who have you reached across the aisle and worked with on this issue?
I worked with folks like Rep. Armstrong, who our districts couldn't look any different. That when you center the actual experiences of your district, not your political parties, but the things that people need, there's a lot more alignment and possibility when that is the centerpiece.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
We are delighted to be joined by the executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Grant Holly is here.
We account for about 67% of the country's cranberries. And then Wisconsin itself, because the cranberry originated here, makes a product that is really good for the environment. And as we're finding out more and more, it's really good for you. Boy, I sound like a commercial.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org, a public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Love that coming back. Yes, Tim, Johnny, Jacob, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded, Education Talk. And we almost had him in here, Chunk, the fattest bear. We couldn't get him on, though. He is right now fully booked up. Jacob, you tried.
Yeah, apologies to Chunk the bear. We're going to try to get you on next week. We ran out of time.
Man.
Yeah. Up next, when we come back, Chunk the Bear.
When we come back, we're trying to get Chunk the Bear on. Fattest Bear with a broken jaw. Anyway, Johnny, here's what's coming
fattest,
in there.
He won Fattest
Bear, right.
Despite that he had a broken jaw. Presumably, yeah. He got in a fight with other bears. But people were very concerned about his ability to, you know, feast on the lavish salmon and all the different... you know, fruits of the park.
Johnny brought this article and we said, you want to talk about Chunk the Bear? He said, no, we don't have to talk about it. But look, he wants to talk about Chunk the Bear
Tim
so bad.
It up and I love Chunk the Bear. I think it's a great story. Hey, but bears prepare for hibernation by eating a lot and fattening up. And, you know, in Alaska, a little geography lesson here, they have Fat Bear Contest and Fat Bear Week because it's getting close to that time of year where...
Yeah, man.
Like, hey, if you haven't fattened up, it's going to be a rough hibernation. So, you know, they do a contest.
They do
contest. By a landslide of voting, right? the people Chunk. Spoke and Chunk 32. Yeah, man, he won fattest bear contest, Fat Bear Week. So champion this week.
I wonder if there's a counter contest of the salmon that get past the fattest bear. If we should hold you that win. Salmon up as being a champion himself for avoiding becoming part of Fat Bear
Week. I know very little about salmon. I should know more. I wish I knew way more about them because they're very interesting to me. But Tim, don't they go upstream to die?
They're headed on their way.
Guess what? You win. You made it. You were not eaten. So you spawn and die.
You get to become part of the fertilization of the but actually, Johnny, again, educationally, that whole process of swimming upstream and dying is also an incredible part of the healthy ecosystem of the streams, because the decomposition of those fish actually put nutrients back into the stream. There's a whole science lesson here, which makes it very short then. Johnny, do you want to go to the Harvard School of Carpentry? Because it seems like you may have that opportunity, because last news, we'll cover it real quickly, but Harvard, it seems, is going to be committing $500 million to create a round of or a set of trade schools. And this is also that President Trump will give them back all of the money he's been holding up for them. And this is a deal that was announced coming out of Inside Higher Education. Linda McMahon and the president were having a press conference. And as the president pointed out, the paper, it may have been papered already at this point, whatever papered means.
It may have been papered.
If you want to know what would be going on in these trade schools, Johnny, according, quote, President Trump, they'll be teaching people how to do AI, lots of other things, engines, lots of things.
Well, you know, Tim, this is interesting. I actually really like this article you're bringing here, because a while ago we kind of dove into what's going on with this beef with Harvard and what's going on with the, you know, the art. You shared your favorite book with me a few years ago. I think it's called The Art of the Deal. That's me using the sarcasm. Look at that.
No. Nice.
But the negotiation tactic here, we're still in this. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of see if there's not something we can do. I'll take this from you. I'll sanction you in this way. And then we'll see. And I'll make some proposals and you make some proposals and let's get all worked up. Yell at each other, rage, regret, remorse, repair all the whole cycle of dysfunctional relationships and call it good. And that's the art of the deal. Hey, let's go. But no, you know, the beef with Harvard is a real thing with higher ed, and it's a negotiation tactic. Like, hey, you know, and so this is Harvard trying to get some of that money that's frozen up freed. Right. And I think good. Hey, if they're going to, you know, put $500 million into. Is that what you said? They're investing or free?
No. To me, this actually wouldn't be as kind of twisted as I think it is if they were donating $500 million to support the existing trade schools.
Well, this there's like a lack of really good trade schools by and large. So to me, this is like unfortunate situation with a really good kind of possible outcome.
Yeah. But you know what, Johnny? As long as they paper it, we'll be there. And now it's time for your moment of zen. Before I became a college professor, I was a shipyard worker. Before I was a writer, I was a warehouse worker. But whatever I did, I was always a member of a labor union.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. Remember to grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, you can always find us on the Civic Media website. And don't be late for homeroom on Monday. And guess what, folks? Make sure you catch next week's class in session on Wednesday. And you can always find us on Fridays with producer Jacob's Choice. And just like today, Busted Pencils broadcast airs 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.
Is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. A federal judge in Oregon has temporarily blocked President Trump from deploying the National Guard in Portland. The president had called the city war ravaged. Oregon officials and residents like this woman called that description ludicrous.
It's trying to create a problem or make a problem when there isn't one.
The president has ordered the deployment of 300 National Guard troops to Chicago. Before the announcement, Mayor Brandon Johnson criticized ICE agents for their treatment of residents there.
He wants to militarize our cities, whether that's through ICE or through the National Guard.
Bad Bunny is headlining the halftime Super Bowl show. The Grammy-winning rapper and singer from Puerto Rico spoke about it as he hosted last night's Saturday Night Live on NBC.
I'm doing the Super Bowl halftime show. And I'm very happy.
Bad Bunny has not recently performed in the U.S., saying he's concerned some fans could be targeted by ICE. CBS News Brief.